Yep. Anything else?
Anything else for the sheriff? I guess I just took some notes from what you said Monday. The evaluation came back. Buster had good temperament, very good obedience with drug search, average or above average dog they rated it at, starting price of $4,000, 90% sure for a quick certification, and like you said, with a deputy showing a good interest here, this may be as good of outcome here as what we could hope for. It's going to be rough no matter what. People are really upset, but we're hoping to come to as good an outcome as possible, and this might be that, you know, as positive as it gets.
Well, I think it's going to be, the training is going to be on the deputy more than a dog, the way it's looking. So the dogs are going to catch back up pretty quickly. Just be getting the deputy up to speed for being green and starting out on this, so. Yeah.
And if you want to talk about budget reductions after the meeting, that'd be great.
No. This isn't Christmas time. Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks, Sheriff. Emergency management, I guess. Lisa was going over things with the townships for NEMA and FEMA primarily. She's continuing to work through that. Road and bridge.
I already mentioned the bus stop canopy has been removed. Odell Blacktop box culvert a year and 2 months later is finished. Asphalt crew's been busy on the asphalt with that project. Budget talk about mill and overlay, 2-inch mill, 3-inch overlay, is approximately $200,000 a mile. A few of these other things we'll talk about later in the agenda.
And in regards to this overlay, Galen, I think you said 220 a mile, right?
200,000.
200,000 a mile? And the Pickerel East Road is missing on the minutes. That was part of this 26 miles, Pickerel East.
I didn't remember that either. Okay. That's my fault.
Yep.
And like you said, equipment, potential paving, we can talk about that later on. Nothing else for Road and Bridge? Up next is a presentation by Paul Moyer, Nebraska Department of Agriculture, Weed Department. This will be the annual review.
Yes.
Could you give us your name and address?
Yes, I will. I've got a handout here for everyone, too. Can I just start that over here? My name is Paul Moyer. I represent the state of Nebraska Department of Agriculture, specifically the APHP, or Animal Plant Health Protection Division. our address is in Lincoln at P.O. Box 94756, Lincoln, Nebraska, 68509. That's where we can be contacted. So, each year, we come by and give the board an evaluation of the noxious weed program. And I know there's at least one new board member here today. And for Mr. Dorn's benefit, I would like to explain how the state fits into the noxious weed program, what it is that we do and why we do it. many years ago, when the law was written, the regulatory authority was given in its entirety to the county board and to the weed superintendent. So the Department of Agriculture has no regulatory authority whatsoever when it comes to controlling noxious weeds. That falls entirely at the county level. So even though I do some inspections and I stay in contact with your weed superintendent, if I find something that needs to be controlled, there's nothing I can do to force control that. That's definitely up to the county weed superintendent and the board. So the reason we do that, the reason we do inspections, is a couple of reasons. One, we use that as a gauge to find out, you know, how well you're controlling the weeds you have. And also, we inspect a certain percentage of your land, and it's those acres are randomly selected. And so in office, we've got a program that will tell us to look at certain individual sections. It's just, again, a random selection. And so when we find a noxious weed problem in any one of those sections, then that gives us an amount of weeds probable in the county based on that percentage. So once we know that there may be some weeds in a particular area, then we continue to monitor that and again, see how well you control the noxious weeds that we know about. Now, I've got 32 counties, so I look at roughly 12 million acres, and so there's no way I can find all the weeds, and I'm not trying to. So.
Again, I see our county follow-up score is way, way lower than possible.
Right, and I'll explain that to you in just a second. And I also will explain to you some of the other results, and I'll let you know what your scores were from the previous 2 years. So we'll get into that in just a second. Okay. So at any rate, with what I was saying earlier, when it comes to forest control, you've got a couple of methods to use if someone is not controlling noxious weeds on their property. You've got what we call a 15-day notice, which after the landowner has been notified, they've got 15 days to comply. If they do not, then you can start assessing a fine of $100 a day up to 15 days for a maximum of $1,500. That's one way you can get some action. The other way is a 10-day notice. After 10 days, if a landowner has refused to comply with the control, then you can do what we call a forest control, which means that you can hire a contractor to go out and either spray or shred, you know, chop, whatever it is you need to do to get those weeds under control, and then send that bill to the landowner. If they refuse to pay, you can assess that to their taxes. So that is another, that's probably the best way if you're not getting any action at all. Now, generally, we don't see that go that far. It can. Generally, a phone call will suffice, but sometimes you just don't get cooperation. So, any rate, and that again applies to any person or entity. So you have control over railroad ground, you have control over federal land, you have control over state ground when it comes to force controlling noxious weeds. So what we're doing is we're here to educate, we're here to oversee and evaluate how your program is doing each year. And this is just one of the many things we do. We get involved in a lot of other areas too. We do some certification and recertification for pesticide applicators. I'm sure Eric's familiar with that. He's probably got a license, I'm sure. We do seed sampling. We do a lot of other things. So this is just one of the things we do. So we're busy. We keep busy. So at any rate, if you have a problem with whether it be a state or federal railroad, you still have that ability to do forest control. Now, certain entities may have a more difficult time collecting your money because somebody's going to have to pay to do forest control. And so you need to have some money in your budget for that. And so any rate, that's kind of how the program works again, and we're just here to, you know, oversee and train and evaluate. So we'll get right into the scoring system. We'll let you know that each county is given 3,400 points initially. Every county gets the same amount of points, and then as the year progresses and we evaluate your program, if there is anything that needs to be improved upon, we'll see that score maybe come down. So what happens, we'll take a look at first here with the inspections. We've got surveys and we've got follow-ups. So what happens is I get a plat map of your county with the selection of sections they want me to look at. I'll go out and I'll take a look at those. And if I find an infestation, then I let your weed superintendent know. And then I'll go back and I'll do a reinspection to see if there's any control being done. If there is no control being done, or if it's not adequate control, then those files will remain open. And so If we have an open file, that just means you've got noxious weeds that are continuing on from year to year that we'd like to see better control on. So when we talk about adequate control, that means we would like to see a complete control before a plant goes to seed. So it doesn't have to be spray necessarily. It can be mowing, can be spraying. Sometimes you can use biocontrol, which means insects or different things like that. So you can pull it if you need to. So that we're not just talking about chemical control always. So at any rate, so what you'll see out of 1,000 points for that category, you were given 1,000 points initially. And then on the surveys, all the surveys were done well and no problems there. But what we're seeing on the follow-ups is we have some open files that we feel need to be addressed and to be controlled, maybe better. Now, with that said, some of these plants are difficult to control. We know that. We understand that some of these plants just don't go away with one control effort. So oftentimes, if we see adequate control for 2 or 3 years, and we see the landowner taking that initiative to spray or whatever it is they're doing, even though the weeds are still there, we still will close the file. Because we see that they are taking an effort or making an effort to get those weeds under control. So in this case, we've got some open files. That's not necessarily uncommon. It's not, but what we're seeing in this county and many others, not just this county, but many others, and Eric and I had a conversation prior to the meeting that the worst problem right now I think we're seeing is this weed called Phragmites. And used to be we'd see it strictly on the river systems, waterways, but we're really starting to see it in any place where it's damp or wet. It might be in a crop drainage. It could be in a road ditch. It could be anywhere. And the problem with this plant, as we were talking this morning, is it doesn't disintegrate quickly. And that stalk, the old stalk, will begin to lay down, it will mat down, and it will literally block the flow of water. So what we'll see is a lot of flooding and backing up of water. So it becomes real critical. The worse it gets as far as the infestation, the worse the flooding can be. So we've all seen a lot of flooding in the last year, and so I think this is one of the plants that all counties, including Gage, should really take a good hard look at to try to get under control and start working with the landowners to get it sprayed or whatever is necessary. So, any rate, so out of 1,000, you got 650 points on that inspection portion. The next portion is an office evaluation and Becky always does a nice job with all of her paperwork and whatnot, so maintained all the points there. And then the third category is your county reports. There's five of those, which all of you should have had an opportunity to see. And the first one is a roster, which just lets me know who you are if I need to contact you for any reason. And the next one is budget. We like to see what kind of money you're spending on forest control, on, your employees and chemical, whatever it is that you're spending your money on. We like to see that you're taking the program seriously. Third one is the activity report. Lets us know what's been going on in the county, what's been sprayed, where, when, how, that sort of thing. All three of those reports maintained all of the points. The next two, the infestation report, which is a report that we use the most. We use that report to monitor the weeds statewide to let us know if the program in general is successful. So if the program is successful, we will see a decreased number of infested acres. And so generally speaking, the program has been successful. Over the last 25 years, we've added 9 new noxious weeds, all the while decreasing the infested acres. So if any of you have been around a long time and are familiar with some of the weeds we've had, you might remember there were much worse years ago. So,
what are the top 3 noxious weeds?
Well, every county is different. So in your county, I would say the top 3 in your county is going to be Phragmites, probably number 1. Musk thistle, probably right up there. And you've got just a smattering of the others. You've got a little bit of leafy spurge. You've got a little bit of knapweed. You even have one small infestation of knotweed in the park. And I know you've been spraying it. That's a tough one. That one's hard to get rid of. But it's good that you're controlling it or trying to anyway. So, I would say those are the worst.
I would say our second most noxious weed is Serratia in certain parts of the county.
Okay.
And what makes it bad is it will take over good pasture as well as,
sure,
you know, must thistles kind of leave good pasture alone, but
right,
Serratia doesn't.
So you're right. And I currently don't have any open files of Serratia, so they just, the random selections or the random surveys that we've done have not shown any. So I don't doubt you at all that there is Serratia. I just haven't seen any yet.
It's out there. John will find it.
They're in John's pasture. Maybe you should go see your place. So. You know, force control over here on this one.
Becky, but, could you...
My Serratia is in Pawnee County, and it's been sprayed.
So, at any rate, that infestation plan, I did have a deduction in points there, and I'll tell you the reason why is because... the number of infested acres, I didn't agree with those infested acres. I have the report here, and I'm not trying to pick on Becky necessarily, but the infested acres were higher than what she reported, and so that's why there was a deduction there. And then, again, pretty minor, not much to really talk about. What we're really concerned about is the weeds on the ground and if they're getting controlled. Some of this other stuff is, you know, it's important that we keep track and we have records of what's going on, but we're still really interested in whether or not the weeds are being controlled. And I'll back up just a little bit. When we're looking at inspections, we have no idea who the landowners are. We don't want to know. We don't care. All we want to know is what's on the property. So it could be, like I say, because we don't want anybody thinking we're picking on anyone. This is, again, totally random. Don't know who it is. And so that's the way that works. Now,
we have a few people you could pick on. We have no problem with that.
Okay.
Becky can give you a list of those.
So even if I did that, I still have no regulatory authority to do anything, which I mentioned earlier.
Well, I knew you had no authority.
So the only authority we do have is... if there's a complete breakdown within the county board and the weed superintendent and we feel that the county is not doing an adequate job, that's when we could come in and say, okay, you folks need to do something different. And we'd have a meeting on what those things would be and could be or should be. And so then we'd, give you that opportunity to try to make those changes. So, that's part of our, you know, our oversight and to make sure that all counties are, you know, complying with the law. So that would really be the only time that you would have any kind of a negative interaction with the state. So I feel really that so far you're doing pretty good, and I know Becky is still fairly new. Her score continues to increase, which is good. Let me just finish up with the report here, though. The last report was the control plan, and there was a slight deduction there. And one thing I really wanted to see there was a little more detail on how you would handle a 10 or a 15-day notice. And when we're talking about 10 or 15-day notices, we realize that you're going to have to get your county attorney involved with that and have a good relationship there so that these things can proceed, forward as they need to. And so that was the only thing there. The last category is your continuing education. That's a requirement of your weed superintendent to attend at least 2 of 4 training sessions that are held each year. 2 are put on by the Nebraska Weed Control Association and 2 are put on by the state. And so they're required to attend at least 2 of those, your weed superintendent always does that. So for this year, I should have mentioned this earlier, this is for 2018 because we're in the midst of the growing season now, so this is actually for last year, okay? So I've got 32 counties, and most boards meet Tuesdays or Wednesdays. It's hard for me to get around rapidly, so that's why I'm probably later than you might like to see me, but I am here now, and so I'm going to give you the scores for 2016 and 2017, and you have the score for this year. So 2016 was 2558 out of the 34. Then when Becky took over, I think maybe that was when she took over. The score jumped nicely to 2870, and now it's gone up now this year, or for 2018, excuse me, for to 2940. So we're seeing a nice increase each year. And so I just, you know, urge all of you to, you know, support what she does. And if you happen to see any noxious weeds, let her know where they are. It's hard for one person to find it all. And so, especially, I know she's got other duties as well. So, you know, if you are familiar with the noxious weeds, let her know. And so she can get out there and let the landowners know they've got some issues they need to deal with. So, that's really all I have. I think Becky's doing a pretty good job overall. And so it's always good to work with her. And when I send her the report, she always lets me know how she's handling those. So, any rate, any questions from anyone?
We don't think she's doing a pretty good job. We think she's doing a really good job.
Okay, good. Very good. So,
I just have a comment. It's been a couple of years, but I had somebody in my district contact me. I think it's interesting that there's no need for prior notification of the weed inspector to step on private property. They can actually go on private property and do an inspection without any sort of a warrant or notification or anything. And to some instances, they have more levity to get on the private property more so than law enforcement. Is that not correct?
That is true. That is true. They do have trespass rights as long as it's regarding their job.
Correct.
You know, if you want to go out there and go fishing, it might be a bad idea. But that is true. And that applies to me as well. I can go on property. I typically don't. I really don't want to get shot at. But I can see most everything I need to see with a pair of binoculars. And if I really feel I need to get on someone's property, I will either try to contact the weed superintendent or maybe even the landowner. I generally don't do that either. But if it's a necessity, we like to let them know. We don't want to abuse any power that we may have been given, even though we can if necessary. Sometimes it's an out-of-state landowner, and you can't find them easily. You see a problem that may need to be taken care of right now. You may have some musk thistle, for example, getting ready to go to seed, and it needs to be controlled right now. So you might want to get over the hill and see what's over there. I don't really see anyone that abuses that. So it works out okay.
One more question, and this is an absolute question. How is the Nebraska Department of Agriculture looking to work with law enforcement with the passage of allowing the production of hemp? And in trying to, in the past, there was flyovers looking for a particular color. How will they be able to discern between the two?
Well, if anyone is growing hemp, now what most people need to understand, and you may understand this, but I'll explain it quickly. There's a big difference between hemp and marijuana. Hemp is simply an industrial crop that's used for maybe fiber and maybe some oils. But the hemp that we're talking about that's going to be produced in the state has no what would be called, I think, the THC or whatever. Those levels need to be maintained very low. Otherwise, they won't meet the criteria. So the state will then, and everyone who's growing hemp will be registered and licensed, so we know where that product is and being grown, or that crop is being grown, so that inspectors can then go out and sample it, test it, make sure that those THC levels are low and that it's not going to be used for anything other than, you know, the industrial manufacturing or whatever. So,
but as you speak of, my understanding is on visual inspection, how can you tell the difference between the two?
You probably can
from binoculars. So yeah, I mean, I'm just based on what you said. So I just think that'll be interesting to see how that goes forward. And
so if an individual, now I can't tell you the law. I don't know how it's all been written. This is all new.
Right.
But I assume what will happen is you'll have an inspector like myself. We will have a list of people who are growers, and whether it be in a field or maybe in buildings or whatever they're using or however they're growing it, we will, you know, likely contact that individual or entity, whoever, and go in and literally sample. They're going to probably know we're coming. So I don't know if somebody's trying to hide something out, you know, behind the barn or something. We're not going to probably know about that, I assume, and it's probably going on now, you know. So
I just was curious about how that would work, and if someone tried to intercede along with the hemp product,
sure.
How
if y'all are working together with law enforcement?
Well, right now, as far as I know, we're not working with law enforcement on that. I'm not aware of any agreements, but there could be. I'm just, some of what I've just mentioned to you is just my own speculation. I don't know.
It's all new. I just
didn't know. Yeah. So the program's being put together right now as we speak. So I'll know more next year as things go and we learn.
I would think that'd be a positive thing we'd want you to do is you go back to report in your committee meetings and with your director that this is of concern to us.
Sure.
And you're getting questions.
You bet.
And just putting it off and putting it off doesn't work. You got to deal with it now.
Right.
Okay. I'm sure the sheriff will take note that Mr. Bauman's very concerned how they're going to be checking on versus marijuana.
Lots of people willing to do the sampling.
So,
yeah.
And
hemp isn't a noxious weed, is it?
No.
So
there's no. So right now, the original, it's been kind of moving around between divisions within the Department of Agriculture. Originally, they thought we were going to take it, our program, the noxious weed program, they thought we would take it. And even though it's still within the Department of Agriculture, it slid over to a different program. So they're not real sure. I'll know more as time goes on, but I'll definitely have that discussion with the administration in Lincoln. So,
and they probably should be talking to the legislature's agriculture committee.
Yep. Okay. I'll definitely pass that along and make sure that they're aware of the concerns. So,
Becky, do you want to add anything since you're here? Right. Are there any other questions for Paul? So I'd ask for a motion to place the report on file.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Bauman, second by Byers to place the Nebraska Department of Agriculture annual weed report on file. Vote 6 in favor and motion carries. Thank you, Paul.
Thank
we'll
you
see
for
you
your
next
time.
Year.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
After patiently waiting, next on the agenda, Amber Lovett with the CASA program director update.
I'm not sure how patient they were. I noticed.
I'm excited.
Oh, okay.
My name is Marcy Fellhoffer. I'm the executive director for the Southeast Nebraska CASA program. I brought my card so you can get the spelling and my address. Our main office is located in Seward. Southeast Nebraska CASA stands for Court Appointed Special Advocates, and we advocate for abused and neglected kids in Seward, Saline, Thayer, Jefferson, and Gage County. I'm going to give you a brief history on Southeast Nebraska CASA. The previous director, that was the director of Southeast Nebraska CASA before me, he brought our program to Gage County in 2015, late. It was around October 2015. Early 2016, our board of directors discovered that there was $40,000 in debt. He was not doing QuickBooks. He had lost our 501c3 because he had not filed 990s. We were no longer in compliance with National CASA, so he was asked to resign. And I started in September of 2016. A little bit about me. I worked in the insurance industry for 19 years and turned 40 and said, what do I want to do with my life? I want to make a difference. I don't want to work in insurance anymore. So this came open at the exact time that I was looking to make a difference. And I'm a numbers nerd, so I have the financial background to help get this program back on track. So by December 31st, 2016, in less than 3 months, I completed an audit. I filed all the past 990s. I retroactively reinstated our 501c3, and the audit did confirm there was no embezzling. He simply forgot to turn in the receipts for the reimbursement grant, which he had applied for, but you had to do a lot of the paperwork, which I was also good at because of my insurance. I had a lot of paperwork back in the day. So going into 2017, we were excited. We were moving and shaking. We were building back our program, and some of the loans that were taken out were able to be paid with those reinstatements because of the reinstatement grant. And so by the end of 2017, we had actually, some of the loans were forgiven because they saw that we had documentation that we were completing the 990s and the audit and everything. So some of the people were willing to forgive some of the loans. And then in 2018, we hired someone in January for Gage County. We were ready to grow again in Gage County. And unfortunately, February 5th, 2018, I was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. So I looked at the board and I said, okay, here we go. And we tried to limp along again, and we worked hard. I fought cancer, but unfortunately I wasn't able to help the person we hired here as much as I had hoped because of my diagnosis. So she resigned in August, and I wasn't done with treatment yet. And so the board met and decided we want to hire with intention this time. We don't want to just post it, and we want to hire someone who is born and raised here who will help grow this program and will have the energy to run the program, hopefully eventually someday on its own. We have 38 children who have been removed from their homes due to abuse and neglect in Gage County alone. That's more than the other four of our counties combined. So really, my goal is in the next, I say 2 to 5 years because I'm realistic, but with Amber's help, Amber has been hired as the program director. Her first day was July 1st, and the energy she has brought to our program already in the 15 days, I am thrilled to have her a part of our organization.
Me too.
She is already, we have our first volunteer, who I'm going to have give a little spiel. He has been volunteering for the Douglas County CASA. He happened to move here. He reached out to me, and he's already been assigned a case. We have great energy. And right now, because I'm a numbers nerd, I wanted to show you kind of what we have spent in Gage County alone. And I want to explain to you that that does not include Amber's salary at all. I have applied for and had been given a grant so that 50% of her salary is for the Victims of Crime grant that I get, the VOCA grant. 50% of her salary is from Nebraska CASA, because Nebraska CASA also supports and knows that there is a huge need here in Gage County. So what this $10,000 is what we spent last fiscal year. I am very intentional about how I do my QuickBooks. They are balanced every month. And I also allocate them. So in Seward County, if I raise money in Seward County, I spend that money in Seward County. And just like with Gage County, you can see right here, the reason we only have $41 is, again, I was sick. I was very sick, so I was not able to do any fundraisers down here. But now Amber's already come up with multiple ideas, and she's going gangbusters. So I do hope that that income will increase. But with that, I also see the volunteer travel and training increasing, because we want to have a volunteer for each child. And right now we are able to say that in Seward County. And when I started, we could not. And so I'm really looking forward to bringing that energy. Side note, I'm cancer-free. I beat the odds. So I have energy. I got clean scans both in March and June. So I am looking forward to working with Amber. I'm going to have Ernesto Medina. He is our new volunteer for Gage County. He is our only volunteer right now that has been sworn in on a case. But he brings in a lot of knowledge from his work in Douglas County. So I'll have him give you a personal story.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Ernesto Medina. I'm currently serving as a senior pastor in transition at St. John Lutheran Church here in Beatrice. And I've had the pleasure of being here now for 4 months, and it's just a good time. There are certain things, I don't know how comfortable I am with being the first, because Jesus said, first shall be last. So I'll have to figure out where I'm going to be last. I do my job, and people see it as a ministry, and I guess that's true. But I have, for the last 30 years, made it a point to take on something that I consider my own ministry, something apart from the congregation and being a pastor or a person in charge of a congregation. And that, for the last 11 years, has been in the area of foster care. That's where I spend my own time. I have 11 years experience serving on a local foster care review board, and I have 5 years experience serving as a CASA volunteer for Douglas County. And it was one of the first calls that I made to Marcy when I came here, because I knew I had some time here and I wanted to put that experience to work, and only to find out that things were just coming up. I'm excited to say that the foundation is just set. I want to also say, and this is the politically incorrect, it's a thing I hate to do. It is one of the most difficult, most challenging things that I do as a person. What actually happens to the children in this state is unimaginable. The kind of advocacy, and which is the position we find ourselves in, is just so incredibly needed. Everyone is doing their job as best they can. And I don't want to take that away. But there really does need to be the one voice that is going to look around the corners, underneath the bed, just really put the pieces together, take the time, when other people are just, you know, doing their 10 minutes per case or whatever they're going to be doing, and actually advocate for what is in the best interest of the child, not what is in the best interest of the system. I'm thrilled. I'm putting all my resources into helping Amber and Marcy build the program in this county. It's a skill set that I have. You have my commitment. I think any money that they request from you is going to be money well spent. It will actually save in the long run funds, because the cases are not going to be going on and on and on and on and on. The primary goal of a CASA advocate is to help a child reach permanency. And that just takes way too long in this state, way too long. And there are simple things that can happen with one person advocating on behalf of the child, so that child can know that they have a home, then that home is permanent, and that they are loved. I thank you for your consideration.
Now I would just ask if you guys have any questions for either myself or Amber or Ernesto about our program.
I have a question. In the past, I was used to be on the Gates County United Way, and mm-hmm. I served as chairman there. They put CASA was a recipient of the funds that were raised. Are you again funded by United?
We have not been. That's something we're going to look at in the future. We have not received any funds from Gage County since I became
off some time ago when the program.
There was a program in Gage County back in 2006. And I think I reached out to the Nebraska director to see kind of what the long history of, and what she could find is it was here from 2006 to 2008, and it really didn't take off there either, unfortunately. And that's why this last time when our employee left in August, I told my board of directors, no, we're going with intention this time. We're going to find somebody that's going to grow this program here. We're not going to flop again. But, yeah, we definitely are going to look into United Way. We're going to look in, you know, there's a number of organizations that just haven't been tapped here, mainly because I'm not from here. I'm not going to claim to be from here, so I don't know where a lot of those funds can come from. I am from Seward County. I live in Utica, but I work in the Seward office, and just knowing people and seeing them in the coffee shop and seeing them makes a big difference. And Seward is our biggest funder because they see what I'm doing in the community. And so I am getting, but again, I keep those money in Seward County. And right now we have a volunteer for every child in Seward County and then some. And that's what I want to get here.
I think we need to look at our budget and look at finding some additional dollars for this program from Gage County. having worked with individuals in this program and mentors and who have mentees that they've been working with in this issue, happen to be married to one, and it's a huge problem that we have, and we've got to admit that we have it, and we've got to go forward to try to help. Mm-hmm. We can't just sit back and say, oh, well, somebody will do it. Mm-hmm. We have to help.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of philanthropic organizations that may
Absolutely.
Have an opportunity to tap into outside of public funds. So that would be my, just kind of where I'm coming from.
Mm-hmm. Now, do some of those fiscal years, because what I'm finding is they've already done it for this upcoming, like.
I don't know what their fiscal years are, probably okay. calendar and not fiscal based on what the state outlines mm-hmm. for the public assistance.
We will be looking into every option we can, because ultimately, if my dream for Gage County comes true, Amber is the program director for here. It becomes its own 501c3. I will coach her all the way, and she gets an employee. You know, that's what this county needs, but it's going to take work, and I'm not afraid of work. And Amber's not either. I'm so excited to have her.
Well, I was going to say, Amber and I have grown up together, and that energy you're seeing in the first 15 days, it'll probably increase, not decrease. So, I mean, it's there. I mean, whether it's the random kids on the basketball team or wherever it is, that energy's there all the time. I guess myself asking, mm-hmm. when you're a court-appointed advocate, that's not foster care. And I've watched some of my friends that are in foster care, and they really do care about the kids they have, mm-hmm. And they struggle with that. What does the advocate do, or what is the advocate's role?
I'm going to let Ernesto, he's...
Thank you.
Pastor Ernesto, thank you for your commitment.
Thank you, Eric. Well. The advocate gets to do everything. We have full access by the court order to be able to spend the time, sit down with the therapists, with the medical doctors, with the teachers, with school admin, with the caseworker, with the GAL, with the county attorneys that are supervising the case, with the Department of Human Services. We have full access, and we have the time because we have one case, one or two, maybe an exception. So we get to put the jigsaw puzzle together, and we get to see what corner pieces are missing from that puzzle. That is what the advocate does.
So this is very hands-on.
It is micro. The Foster Care Review Board is macro, which I really enjoyed, but I needed to get into the life of a child. The training is one of the most superior trainings I've ever undergone. We are fully supported in terms of dealing with compassion fatigue, because the work is incredibly difficult, as you can imagine. But we have full access, and we are in there. We're talking and supporting, finding support with, because we're the safe person, for the foster parents oftentimes when communication just isn't happening. And so we advocate if we see it in the best interest of the child, so that the foster care and that family is getting all the resources that they need, particularly if they're court ordered and things are falling through the crack.
That's a tough thing for the foster parents. They get stuck sometimes like that.
Yeah. I would also say that everyone, all the players, again, everyone does their job and everyone has their work to do. But because of regulations and laws and stuff, they're often limited. The CASA doesn't have that. And so we have the freedom to go out of the box and really find creative things and put the pieces together and make the phone calls. And so that when we come before the judge, there is a greater consensus that doesn't normally exist, because normally people are making the decisions 15 minutes before the court hearing and just trying to put the pieces together. So,
thank you. Counselor, did you have something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, the Gage County hasn't had a CASA program, a good CASA program, for some years. Part of the problem was, and I'm horrible with dates, but so much of the effectiveness of the CASA program is the individuals. And if they come in and, as the pastor said, they will ask the questions that sometimes HHS doesn't want to, you know, it's like, I don't like to answer this, but I can't do that because we don't have any money. Well, fine, let's find another avenue to find the money to get the service. And at least in this county, I think they do a very good job of coordinating. There's so many agencies that work with the youth and particularly family, single-parent family situations. And this is just another tool, if you will, that helps. If you've got a good guardian ad litem, they'll work hand-in-hand with the CASA, exchanging information. And the CASA just has a little more of a, a personal opportunity as opposed to an attorney. I mean, how can you get personal with an attorney? You know? So it does provide another avenue of information about the family, which is critical because sometimes we've got so many resources and they're just missed. So, again, I look forward to it. Again, I know we've been working, and it's tough to get people to volunteer because this is one of those gut-wrenching type of jobs. And
National CASA has the training program that Pastor Ernesto talked about. It is 30 mm-hmm. hours, so I have to get the volunteer to commit to that 30 hours of training in addition to then the time spent with that child. And they are required to have 12 hours every year of continuing education. So we make sure, like Roger said, that those volunteers, when they're in the house, if they see a need, they know the different resources available in our community to help piece those. You know, maybe there's not funds from the Department of Health and Human Services, but maybe this other organization can help that child.
We spend an enormous amount of money on legal fees through the county attorney's office and the sheriff's office, and so many of those problems stem from that first few years. If you can fix the problems then and give them a good base, I mean, that just steers kids the right way. But no, thank you. I'm excited to see Amber in this role.
We'll definitely see her in the community and pounding the pavement. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your patience, too. I know it was a lively, enjoyable meeting so far.
Only cost two radios.
So Pastor Lee and Pastor Ernesto have a lot of the members of this board that they're responsible for. So
they're already caring for us.
Yeah.
Discuss and approve or disapprove heat and or frost limits for the county roads. Is there any discussion on this? If there's not, I suppose we could move on.
Let's ask Galen. Did you come up with anything between Monday and today on heat and frost limits?
I went to try to contact and talk with Mark, and he's out of the office. But I did go back through a NERMA county road book that had example resolutions, et cetera, for temporary 90-day permits to be used for weather-related conditions on that. And basically, it's a generic permit that you can use up to 3 months per calendar year to set up. It didn't have no specified for your weight limits or whatever you wanted to do on that. It was just kind of an open permit. And I did send that up to Don and said put a copy out so you could take a look at it. Because I hadn't had time to go over it on that, and asked her to also send one to Roger in case you guys wanted to go some kind of direction like that.
Well, I thought we talked about this a couple years ago and the ability to enforce this and the signage. We talked about flip-down signs, and then it advocates the State Patrol scale guys to come into town. I thought we kicked this around a couple years ago after we had done that paving project and felt that it would be an operational and administrative nightmare to try and enforce that, and then it would unduly focus and bring folks down here that I know Eric doesn't necessarily care for directly. So I think it's a good program, but it becomes such a bureaucracy to try and enforce that we can chase our tail, or law enforcement, or...
We did discuss it prior. I don't know if we decided it was would be a nightmare to implement it, but you know, why do we want 200,000 tons of rock hauled up the Philly Adams Road in the middle of August if that's the time frame they choose to haul it, when it's blasted hot, that's coming from another county going to another county, I mean, there's just times when we probably have to put it in place.
I don't disagree with it in theory.
What would the restrictions be, though, John?
Well, that's what we've got to decide. I mean, and I don't know.
I mean, you're wanting to lower it below the 80?
Right. Probably.
Right now, it's at 95.
Yep. Well, I mean, I'm talking about standard 80, you know.
Yeah.
John brought this up for primarily hot and cold reasons, the freeze-thaw when the ground was soft, and then also the hot when the asphalt's going to take the most wear and tear. So that's why it's on for today as potential limitation.
And it's probably potentially far more harm with the frost cycle coming out. And, you know, as far as material getting hauled, there's a lot of it hauled at that time. I mean, it's generally more hauled then than now.
Oh. Biggest things would be who decides when to close it, what the restrictions would be, and then, like Matt said, how do you enforce those restrictions? I don't know what those would be. Are there any counties around us that do this?
Most of the counties that do it will do I call early spring and frost and coming out of the ground time, and that's basically when I look back through this NERMA road book that I had, which says that this is one that a lot of the counties will use for their early spring, you know, freeze and thaw cycle. It really didn't go it's kind of a permit that leaves it open for all weather conditions that you can use it in. But I do know there is a few around that do it in the early spring cycle, but I'm not aware of any that do it in the heat of the year. So.
And that's probably when it's the most damaging is when, but if you have good base, that freeze thaw shouldn't
mush it out. Well, it depends on the year, like that last fall and this spring. Yeah, it was a rough one on the roads.
I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I just remember we kicked it around, and I think we just became fatigued with it because we couldn't come up with any specific guidelines. I think it becomes more of a consequential enforcement and less of a deterrent. It's just you're going to roll the dice. You're going to catch one out of every 25 trucks. It's a good effort. Don't get me wrong. I didn't know if there was some new information that we had or new. But anybody got a new idea?
Well, I don't know. I think we need to further discuss it and, you know, find some. Maybe some counties that have actual limits in place for their spring cycle and potentially for heat. I mean, heat's kind of a more off and on thing, but, I mean, we're going to be hot enough this week, but we could be another 10 degrees hotter.
So you're looking at more of the commercial traffic than the farm traffic?
Well, I think you probably can't.
Well, I mean, what you mentioned was hauling rock,
yeah,
and I know the route you're talking about, but that's commercial.
It's commercial, but I mean, I think if you put the weight limit in place, it's going to apply to everybody for that period of time.
What kind of weight limit are you talking?
Well, that's what we got to come up with.
I mean, what are you thinking?
You know, in the spring, it might be half.
See, I strongly disagree. We can't do that. We're here to provide an infrastructure for moving stuff around. I mean, we can't restrict it to half. That'd be 40,000 pounds.
An empty truck.
Yeah.
I think there's merit in providing notification and ask, because who pays for the roads? The people using them. And so if they get tore up, we've got to go back to the well and ask for more money to fix them. So there's, if nothing else, it's just there's a desire to be compliant just to help to maintain the infrastructure. But I don't know how to put there's a system in place.
And I guess, you know, maybe we need a little bit more input from Minnelli on it, but if we lose half our road for a one-month period of time, if that's costing us half the life of our road, it's not worth it. I mean, we can't afford to do it.
If that was the case, I think that'd be right, but I mean, I think that's probably a little stretch to say we're losing half our road. I mean, if that was the case, if we were going to lose half, that would be an easy one to say, no, we're not going to run these weights. But we've obviously been doing this every year for quite a few years. There is extra wear and tear on them, though, for sure.
Yeah.
I guess I'm looking at the farm side. During that spring thaw period, that's about the only time the farm guy has to move the grain out of his bin, get it moved to some elevator, E-Energy Adams, where you ever have to go. And if you restrict that time frame for hauling, you know, when are you going to do it?
Along with the summer
would be the only other spot, and that would be too hot. You couldn't do it. So I don't.
Practically speaking, when the scale guys come down, does the sheriff's department enforce the weight limits? Who does that?
DOT.
How many DOTs? How many of them would they send down here to enforce this? A fleet?
We have one out of Hebron, and three or four up in Lincoln. You know, just pinned. If you put in a request, they would probably.
Gus, that's one comment I'm going to make. You don't request those clowns come down here. But they're a bunch up.
For a period of how many months?
He's right.
No, practically speaking, I'm not trying to. I agree with what John's saying, but practically speaking, I don't know how you enforce it. So they put two in the county. The state patrol might allocate two of the scale boys down here.
Wouldn't happen.
Okay.
They've got their areas and their districts.
Okay, so how long when they pull a vehicle over and they check the weight, how long does that take?
Hour.
Okay, yeah. So then how many of the trucks drive by that law enforcement officer as he's engaged with one person? It's difficult to enforce. It's like trying to push sand uphill.
I know many, many years ago when I started with Sheriff Steinkamp, the board had requested him to hire their deputy and get a portable scale, and that's what they wanted to do the whole time. Well, as you see, that didn't go anywhere. I don't know what the conversations were back then, but I did get another complaint last week on Philip and a blacktop on a lot of truck traffic. A lot of it from E-Energy, I think, is where they're coming from. He said, weight-wise, you don't know, but he said there's a lot of truck traffic on there, and he said he knows they're speeding, so we try to patrol that as much as we can when we have time to do it, but I do get calls on that stretch from time to time, especially this time of year, I guess.
About every 4 miles, we put a four-way stop.
Well, I've been asking somebody to post 55 on there, at least help me out, but I don't know if we ever got that done or not.
We had that discussion a little bit Monday, Road and Bridge. Well,
and with that road, I mean, it detours trucks anyway with, like, the Sunny Yoke Farm. I mean, that road's not the most conducive to trucks anyway, so people don't like to use it. But at the same time, this winter, when it was soft and nasty out, or when it rains, what's the first thing we ask people to use? Use hard surface roads whenever possible.
Shoulder that makes it tough. It does. So.
There's a lot of 57 county on Philly out of Blacktop. Mm-hmm.
And Kansas plates on there, too. That's a tough one. Also, our STP dollars and stuff, those come from gas or fuel tax, right? Is that correct?
I'm not 100% sure where all that money comes from. Comes from your miles and stuff like that. He's all figured in that, I believe.
And the majority of that comes from your fuels.
County attorney suggests we make it a toll road. Hey, it'll deter traffic.
No, it is. It's something. There's wear and tear on there, but
they'll go around it.
We're kind of at the same place we were before, I think, because we did. I think we talked about this maybe 3-4 years ago.
I think we need to come up with something.
I think the enforcement deal that Matt talked about was probably the biggest thing. I'm not so sure many of you are, because we talked about flip down signs. Mm-hmm. And those are always fun, and most of those are warning signs, like ice on the road type cars, mm-hmm. bridges, or whatever. If you're doing an enforcement where they're going to get a ticket, now you got notice requirements and all kinds of fun stuff like that. If you don't do, like, from September 1st to November 30th, so the public has an absolute notice of a change in the rules of the road. So I think that's where a lot of the problem came about, and why the board had talked about educating the public, and hopefully they will help take care of their roads and extend the life of their roads so their taxes aren't so high.
Early spring wouldn't hurt commercial traffic as much, but it hurts the farmers more. Summer, you'd have both. That's a tough one. Build the roads heavier. John, anything else on this? I mean, this is for discuss, approve, or disapprove. I mean, we've discussed some. I just don't know if there's...
Well, I would support John, and if there's a way to maybe get something, maybe Minnelli's got some ideas that we didn't have 3 or 4 years ago. I think it's an opportunity to at least, you know, look at it again. I hate to just... I want to be supportive of John because I don't think it's a bad idea, but I'm perplexed with how we put the whole thing together without it not just being a bureaucratic nightmare and process. And I,
well, even when the roads were posted at 80,000, that was an issue, you know, because that was sold when everybody came around. That was sold as state spec limits, mm-hmm. and then we were limiting to 80,000, and there were certain DOT officers that were having a heyday with it.
And I'll go back to my contentions again. The other trucks, like you're familiar with, Eric, that have the axles, that does far less damage than that single axle with a single tire that will put 20,000 pounds on, and that's what's legal, okay?
That two-axle grain truck
What you can have, one single axle, 20,000 pounds. Two tandem axles, or two axles, 34,000 pounds, not over 20,000 on one axle of those two. You go back to triples, it's 42.5. So you're going from 34,000 of two to 42.5 for three. And that's why my contention is those three triple axles, like you run, like other trails run, does far less damage to the road than what the two do or the single.
Especially the single. School buses are a killer on roads.
The weight ain't there.
School buses are still tough on roads. I don't know why. I don't know if they're really heavy. Well, they must be fairly heavy.
Mark explained their calculation that their engineers use called easels, and he said school buses are actually really bad because of the weight that's concentrated on that single axle.
John, would you like to limit school buses on the blacktops?
I think they probably, you know, there's weight there, but it's not what you're hauling, Eric. And the one thing I'd ask, Galen, it's been a while since I drove the Philly Adams Road, but I think it's already starting to show weight-bearing failure with the linear cracks. I mean,
I can tell you, look at it again. I haven't specifically drove it and looking for all the cracks, but last time I was on it, I mean, it still had about as good a ride as it did last fall, but from day one, that thing hasn't been perfect.
No.
But a lot of that, when you did that overlay, it didn't get much. When you did that bond issue?
2-inch lift, wasn't it? 2-inch?
No. Minimum two, yes. Minimum of two.
Boy, some of it didn't even look like two.
So. Well, there were some stretches there where it pulled apart and it slid. You had that down in your area, too, where they had to go back. And we had to arm wrestle for a while over that.
You ended up fixing some of that, didn't you, where it, like, sloughed apart?
Yes. And that was done in two lifts. It wasn't all put into just one single lift. There was I call it correction lift, and then they come up and they put the ride quality lift on top of that. So.
Would you like any other information, or?
Well, I'd certainly be interested in what some other counties are doing and how much damage does occur during that frost thaw cycle.
I can ask Mark to come down to next road and bridge. He works with several counties, and he has the information, you know, with several other different counties. If that's what you'd like, I can see if he could attend, or the board meeting, whichever you prefer.
Is it just something that you could ask him?
I don't think he has to come down. Why don't you just, whatever counties he does, are there any other counties doing this?
Maybe there's a county that's got a whiz-bang program that works and would fit for us. I don't know.
Or spring in, or for this time of the year.
Yeah, and potentially summer. I mean, I think that's kind of a...
The summer is more concerning than the spring?
Well, no, I think the summer is more hit and miss. I mean, you're always going to have that frost cycle, thaw cycle, but you're not always going to have excessive heat.
It can't hurt to ask.
Yeah. I'll see what I can find out. Report back.
Thanks, Galen.
You bet.
Discussion on 2019-2020 county budget. Couple things on there. This will just keep coming up every time now. Galen presented And Terry, I don't know if you've had time to look at it or not. We've asked Galen about capital purchases. He brought some information as far as potential needs for equipment. This would be a time to talk about that also. If we're going to do any paving or put any paving out to bid for next year, we don't need to take any action or anything like that. But if there are some projects that you guys want us to look at, now's really the time that we need to be looking at those. Just as well as if we are going to include some equipment purchases, now's the time to really be starting to hone in on that.
I'll be the naysayer again. As far as overlays in this yearly time frame, wherever it starts bidding or whatever, I got from a reliable source that I won't mention the company's name, but their bids are coming up 50% higher than what they were a year ago. And I don't know if it's quite that high, but I guarantee you with all the road repair out there and everything else going on, you're going to get stung with a high bill if you want to get it done shortly, because there's too much work and not enough contractors. It's simple supply and demand. So that's all I got to say about that.
But, Galen, the estimate that you gave us on the overlays for Mark, that $200,000 for a 2-inch mill and a 3-inch overlay, that was based on what he feels his current price is, right? Or what we can
that was earlier in the bidding. After all the flooding started.
Yeah.
And they were taking out a new bidding and stuff for different things. And when I asked him for that estimate, he said, well, and I don't remember the exact figures, but prior to the flooding, asphalt was, say, like $65 a ton. Well, after all the flooding and the damages, that jumped up into the upper, I believe, $78 a ton or so. And he even, he said it at this time of the year, he said, this is just a kind of an estimate for what's going on. But he said, we have taken other bidding after this. And they actually rejected it because the prices were so high. He says, at this time, there's no way that I can foresee what it'll be after, say, the first of the year, you know, which way it's going to trend, whether it stays going up or tapers off or starts going down. He said, I can't estimate that at this time of the year.
If we would bid something, we'd have to bid it with a price in mind, and if it's some outlandish number, we'd have to reject it. The other thing would be, if we were going to do something, we'd need to leave a real open time frame on it so that people can bid that to fill for next calendar year. But you may be right. It may be too high to even.
And I think that's probably what we do, is we identify the roads and put them out to bid. If they're too high, we reject them and bid them again the following year.
Yeah. We can take it or leave it. We have a choice.
Do you want to discuss any equipment, potential equipment you're wanting to budget for this year, or do you want to go over any of that?
I know one thing that I'm not going to say a necessity, because a lot of stuff's a necessity, but the low boy we have down there to haul the bigger equipment we've purchased in the past few years is inadequate at best. It's going to be a safety issue at some time, and that's the hot button every says. Call it a safety issue, then you'll get it. But I'm not saying it's necessary. I'm just saying it's one of the first things I feel we have to look at.
I'd agree with you on that.
Let's say focus on critical needs, things that allow us to maintain maintenance mode. We've got several years of maintenance ahead of us.
Yes, and I did pass out a list when I put out the revised budget and tried to show you the hours on, like, our dump trucks and our motor graders, because that was one item that we had. I had in the budget line a dump truck and a possible motor grader. The other item was a pickup for a crew along with the trailer. I believe those are the items in my equipment line that I put in the budget.
How are those other Sterlings? I know those were a pretty inexpensive purchase years ago. I think we had one that was just a dead duck.
That one's gone.
You're right. I know that one we put out the pasture.
Well,
but I just didn't know. How are those running?
Well, we got rid of the one that gave us a lot of headaches that had the square hole cut in the radiator and all that, and so that went down the road, thank gosh. But the other ones on there, an older one, we did replace the engine in last year, I believe it was, done some work. Most of them have had all the rear ends and transmissions and stuff like that replaced because they average probably 400,000 or 500,000 miles on them. On the all the Sterlings, basically, once we got rid of one or two of them for engine problems and stuff like that, right now they appear to be doing okay. Unfortunately, the one that we have the most problems with, continued problem, is the 2014 International, and that thing there about every. Three weeks ago ends up because all the sensors come on and it's just a continual money pit and it's a, like I said 2014 or 16 year, I don't remember what it is on that list, and it's just dollaring me to death.
Ever since those trucks had to come out, yeah, with a depth flood on them, most of them are nightmares. Yeah. A Sterling truck, components are not available other than the generic ones, which I'm talking about transmission, rear ends, and everything else. Cab parts are not available. Nothing's available to purchase, to repair on those Sterlings anymore, except for engines, generic parts, stuff like that.
Wasn't that 2014? Wasn't that one took forever to get delivery on? Wasn't that the last time there was a flood or there was some flooding? Was that 2014 when we had that stuff over
15,
there?
Yeah.
That's the 15 one that took was forever.
That's the one that took forever to get, and then the rear end locked up,
yep,
on us. And
that winter, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Holy smokes.
But it's been, like I said, from day one, it's just been, I call it a lemon, but.
You know, there's always that quality statement and that value statement when you spend money. That 97 Mack dump truck there, is that the same weight or the same size as these Sterlings?
Yes.
Would you consider that to be better or worse than these Sterlings that are almost 6 years newer? In some cases, one's 10 years newer.
Quality-wise?
What's a better truck, the Mack or the Sterling?
I'd say that's been the most trouble-free truck that we ever had.
So I know we pay for the Mack name.
Yes.
We pay for the Mack quality. But
yes,
over the life of the vehicle and the money you're spending, there's a value statement there that's sometimes cheaper is not better.
That's very correct. We've done very little of putting money into that old 97 Mack. And that truck prior was on the road all the time pulling a pup trailer. And then as it got older, we retired it to the, right now I believe it's the bridge crew uses it to pull their trailer around and haul dirt and material in. And then, of course, in the winter, they're all used for, you know, snow removal. So, but that has been an excellent truck.
I think we did get some criticism, I think, regarding sometimes the brands that we look at, sometimes, or the ones that seem that we purchase. But, again, there's that value statement in the money you're spending. You can waste a lot of money buying cheap stuff.
Yes, very true.
What truck would you retire? What would you get rid of if you got another dump truck?
It was one of those Sterlings. Let me grab my list.
But was it the 01 with the new engine?
No, we wouldn't. We'd keep that one. Let's see here. Sterling dump truck. I believe it's either the 02 or the 06. One of them is pulling let's see which one pulls a pup. Yeah, that 106, that currently pulls a pup on that. And then that 1046, I believe, is the one that the asphalt crew uses to pull their equipment around and also when they dig out asphalt, haul their old asphalt away. So I believe it's between those two. One of those two would go.
Would you just sell that then?
I would say probably, in my opinion, we'd probably do like we did the last one. We'd put it on Purple Wave. That seemed to be, would get us pretty good money out of that last time we done that.
Drive it in the river.
I've been tempted to do that on that International.
I know at one point we talked, and this is going back several years, we talked about looking at the what would essentially be capital equipment and figuring out a cost per mile. So when we look over the life of our equipment, we can see where we're spending money and at some point decide to do something different. Mark had talked about that some time ago, and I don't know, do you keep any records that you figure out the cost per year
or cost per mile per vehicle? Again, it's all about the value statement.
I'd have to get with Nancy on that to see. I know we keep track of everything we spend on the vehicle, and I don't know if she keeps that on record for how long that I can't answer. I'd have to talk to her and see.
Because when we were talking, maybe it was motor graders, we were talking at one point where, you know, the cost is like this, and when you get to a certain year, then it starts to go like this, and then that's about the time to get rid of it, when you know.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Terry, we talked about blades, too, and we'd also talked about the problems with that new M-Series, the 1s, 2s, and 3s, and then the cost difference on John Deere's off-state bid this year also, because ever since they went to the M-Series, there's some advantages, but there's been some mechanical issues. But, I mean, something to be thinking about here. We're getting closer and closer.
How is that motor grader that we had that? Was that an intake issue that ruined the motor or fried a piston? What was that one we had?
That's an M2, and that's,
yeah,
that's the third engine on that.
That's on the dirt crew machine, yes.
Is that okay now? Because was that?
No, we're currently in going back and forth with them. When they fixed the, let's see, we're on the third engine. When they fixed it the last time and we got it back, after they overhauled the engine, it still had some blow-by. And Bill made the shop foreman up there in the Lincoln shop aware of it. So they said, well, you run it for a while, keep track of the oil consumption, make sure you keep all your oil samples, et cetera, et cetera. Let's run it and see if it gets any better. Well, that's been going on for probably, I'm going to say, a year or longer. And when Bill here about 2 months ago finally addressed it, because there was some blow-by, I call blow-by oil, getting into the air filter system. So he confronted him about that. Well, the original overall shop guy up there in the Lincoln shop, no longer there, so he was working with a new one. Well, here approximately 3 weeks ago, he came down to the shop, and I sat in on it, and there was another cat gentleman there, and Bill went over what the issue was going on, and he'd been keeping from day one when they told him all the records of the oil samples and everything, and he gave him all a copy of that. And he said, you know, he had approached them several times about it not getting any better. They need to do something. Well, and he just kind of got that shoved back all the time. Well, now it's come to a head. So we're going to find out one way or the other if they're going to do anything. So, like I said, it's on its third engine.
Galen, that was bad information. I've never heard of an engine that consumes oil that stops using oil.
Yeah,
not in my lifetime.
But this was a admitted failure on the machine upon delivery. Correct. It was.
Well,
it's always been their issue, right? Was there a hydraulic hose or a return?
Well, the first issue, I believe that
it was the intake hose that was left loose and sucked.
That's
right
after they overhauled the first one. Yeah, because the first one, I don't remember if it was the oil pump went out or the fuel injection pump went out and dropped something into the oil pump, so it had to go in for a total overhaul on that one.
And this is which manufacturer?
Cat.
Caterpillar.
Yes. So, and then we've just had, when they overhauled the first one, it come back, nobody caught it, and I can't tell you how many hours it's out there running, and when it come into the shop for its first oil change, they discovered that the intake hose wasn't attached to the air filter, so it'd been sucking all this dirt. So that's why it had to go in to get the second overhaul on it. And that's the one that came back, and it was still had a blow-by to it.
But that was a production issue. That wasn't a surveillance or a maintenance issue, because it wasn't connected, but it wasn't. There was a part failure, wasn't there?
Something internal happened.
Yeah, something internal is either in the fuel pump. Something dropped down into the oil pump, or the oil pump went out. I'm not 100% sure.
Second time there was a problem, a service problem with the Caterpillar.
Yeah.
And then third time though, when it comes back with a rebuild engine. I just don't understand how you can have major blow-by on a rebuild engine. I'm wondering if we have an overhaul with the same rooms or something. But I guess we'll see what happens here very soon on that one.
So we got, like I said, I know Bill said the new person in charge of the shop finally did return his phone call, because they've been trying to Bill's been trying to get a hold of him ever since, basically, that they came down, whatever it was, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and the guy finally did return his call. So we'll see what happens when they get together again.
Is it?
Yeah, they're using it out there on the dirt crew machine. It's not used daily. They take it out, you know, and when they're done at the, they use it on the project, finish up the project.
They can't come back and contend that we're using a piece of equipment and making it worse.
They're telling us to use
it. Yeah, we were told to continue to use that and keep track of all this stuff, what's going on from day one.
I hope we'll forget about it.
Yeah, so.
Anything else for budget discussion as far as today?
We really, unless I just missed it somewhere, I don't have any information on.
Just anything that we need to be planning for ahead of time, if there's projects you want us to be looking at. Things
right.
Like that.
It's not only discuss the county budget, that's everything.
Yeah, anything. I mean, anything, we don't have anything
I don't have
prepared.
Any information on requests or anything else.
Galen handed some stuff out. The only thing we have is just
Galen's stuff.
What Galen handed out, and then the sheriff's.
Okay, so the discussion on the 2019-20 county budget is only road?
Pretty much right now, road and sheriff's department.
Okay, if we didn't get into the county attorney's office.
We can.
If we're done with that, Patty, you have something else for us before we adjourn?
Yeah, I do.
Thanks, Galen.
These are all good guys to figure out. Just kidding. Withdrawing what I talked about earlier, we can't do a resolution. We're not a county of over 100,000. I mean, the Lincoln and Omaha is the August 10th.
Patty,
so no,
I looked at those maps briefly. There's two individuals that's filed them on six different tracts of land. In these cases, it looks to me like they've all been filed prevent plant.
They have what?
Been filed at the SES prevent planning.
Yeah, they're right. They're not. Yeah, and Lisa went and walked one of them. She just went out in the hallway.
Okay.
She went and walked.
But all I'm saying is that. And so they're wanting to take these prevent plant acres and reduce the taxes on them. Now they're getting paid. There's no question they have to have crop insurance. They're getting paid a prevent plant for crop insurance. There's no guarantee Eddie's going to raise anything on his acres this year. There's no guarantee I'm going to raise anything on these acres. But we're going to drop these. They might make more on this prevent plant than anybody else per acre. It's a crop insurance issue. It's a maintenance issue. That's all I got to say.
And from what I called NACO because I knew Roger wasn't going to get up, done down here. Lloyd's in my office. This is something that is to be determined by the County Board of Equalization. I'm not passing anything off, but I help you guys maneuver through the way I've got the soils and everything classified. This is a decision by you guys of what if there's more than 20% of the assessed value that's been destroyed or cannot be. You know, if a house, that's pretty normal. That's it. I know. Hey, what you're talking about with this land.
You got three things. You got an improvement, residential, and land. That's the three things. Mm-hmm. And the declarations are only dealing with residential. From my cursory reading of this, now you said it doesn't even apply to counties of less than 100,000.
No, I'm saying the August 10th deadline. It won't do any good for us to do a resolution. The August 10th deadline is only for Lincoln and Omaha.
Well, then why do we bring it up? If we're past the deadline.
No, we're not. July 25th. That requires this board to have a special meeting or try to get Lloyd to do them by this afternoon. For you guys.
Terry, on that crop insurance, if you take the minimum you have to be in the farm program, there's no preventive planning.
But in a case like this, well, this isn't the first time this has happened to this land. over the last 10 years, it's probably happened five times. So if they're dumb enough not to get maximum insurance on that land, that's their problem, not ours.
I agree with you.
Okay.
But
well, maybe that's a discussion we have at the hearing. And
maybe heard. That's why they want a reduction, because they don't cover the on the other end.
Well, that's not our fault, though, Eddie.
That's right.
Okay.
But to me, this has nothing to do with the acres that didn't get planted and that's in prevented plan. It has to do with the acres that's either got 2 or 3 foot of sand on them, or they've been, you know.
And all these acres old. Do not have 2 or 3 acres of sand on them.
I can't
them,
tell that from those pictures.
I will almost guarantee it. The acres that you see there are misleading. That's the whole area that you see. You might see a pile of sand here as big as his office.
True.
And you're going to reduce the taxes on all the rest?
Okay, go ahead. But I think we need to take a look at it.
So we're all going to walk out there with a spade and see how deep the sand is out there?
Can Lloyd get out there and take pictures so that we can...
This is what, and that's, you know, basically at the county board workshop, and I don't know if any of Don did, you didn't go this year, did you? The county board workshop, they talked at it at length, and you know, there was so many gray areas and so many variables.
I didn't.
What they told me, I did call because, like I said, I knew Roger was going to be stuck here, and I had Lloyd down there today. And, you know, they said, first of all, I said, can we extend this deadline to August 10th? And no, you cannot. It doesn't really give that information here. But it's only for Douglas County and Lancaster, the counties that have large populations. So by the 25th, we have to be done, even though they have until the 15th to file them. We don't have to do a 7-day notice like you would normally do on a regular protester. But the county board has to determine what percentage of damage is to each one of these that have filed. So if there's 20% of the value damaged, then what we do is probably take it down to a wasteland acre, which is 200 an acre for that year. We can't take it down to zero, but we take it down to 200 an acre, determine how many acres that is, and then we have a place on here, it looks like, where it says current year assessed value for County Board of Equalization use only, significant damage must exceed 20% of the current assessed value as defined in the instructions. And then we put the reassessment value down. So the only thing I can tell you is Lloyd can call these people. You know, he's not going to have time by 1 o'clock to get stuff done for because I need him here because we've got people coming in that he may need to address. Otherwise, you would have to have a special meeting on the 25th with the quorum here to decide this.
Does it say on there the total tract acres there are on each one they're filing this claim on, the total tract acres?
Well, I would run my each one has like a drawn out, like how many acres it affected. Like these four have the sand on it.
It's 20% of the assessed parcel's value.
But I mean, I'm just.
No, I know where you're going. There's 100 acres. Simple math.
You know, each 100 acres in this tract, you know, approximately it's all going to be the same value per acre, is what I'm saying.
Well, but the other thing, it says up above here, failure to adequately identify the destroyed real property. So you can't just say it's 80 acres out there unless it was all underwater and has sand on it.
Well,
and that's what you're going to. You got to tell me it's these 10 acres over here by the bank where it came up over it. Okay?
So if we don't have adequate information, we can deny the claim, they can appeal it to Turk, and they still have a process to go through. And here's the thing that gets me. How come this is, for all counties, how come it's population-based? Like the taxes that our citizens are paying down here are less worthy than what they are up there?
It's that
we've
way.
Got a, we've got a river that comes right through here and beats the heck out of everything. An exclusionary law? A regulation?
Because
that frustrates me.
The instruction part of it, to me, did not.
Give them more time. It's not.
Not us.
No,
not.
The other ones, though.
She got these on the 15th. When did you know about this? So the 15th, we got 10 days. Now we're down to the 17th. How do we have a special meeting? And how do we make a decision, because we've made a bad one before, with information that we don't have? We want to be fair. We want to be equitable. So now, I mean, basically, if we don't see pictures, and well, absolute
pictures,
maps.
There's pictures.
Hand-drawn or photos?
Lisa's got drawn photos. That's why I wish she would have stayed here. She's got drawn photos.
If we're comfortable, then we can do that. If we're not, I would say deny it, and that gives them more time to go to Turk and let them make their case at Turk for $25.
To be fair
to them, let them go up there. Because how can we even defend that? How can we look at these and agree to do that?
Well, a few of them are relevant. They're pictures of Hickory Road or Hickory Road flooded.
Right.
You know.
Lisa walked the bank of one. I don't know where she went. She walked the bank. That's where she came from. You know, it may be only 20 acres affected. And that's probably close to a river. I probably have that cropland valued pretty good, is what I'm saying. And so then if it's 20% of the assessed value, if it was $100,000, right, then if it's 20%, if I have a $20,000 damage or more, then I give them a waste land value.
It has to exceed 20%. It could be 100%. If it's some of that ground you're looking over in Iowa, it's gone.
I know. Okay. And like with his
who's
going to
make
sand.
That determination of what percent it is? Lloyd can help, I assume. But
Lloyd's here for 2 days before he goes on vacation.
When did this 425 form show up? How long has this been in existence?
It's been out because I forwarded emails in June to you guys.
But how long has it been out? Because at the bottom of the form, it looks like there's a March 29th, 2019 date on it.
Let's see here.
Is
this a relatively new form?
Or that's actual bus?
It's what the legislature put into play. I was going to grab Myron the other day.
The legislature passed it this year.
This year. So we haven't had adequate time. They show up on the 15th because that's the last day. So now we have to make a reasonable decision. I would say deny them and let Turk shake it out. You dropped it in our lap. We understand what you're saying. Turk, you go shake it out.
Just to remind everybody, these both individuals I do remember coming in front of equalization back when the buyers and I and who else sat in on the protest, and it was a yearly thing that they came in.
Every year they
okay.
But what if we get this wrong because we're trying to make a lickety-split decision? And what if they are entitled to something that we don't do right? Or
I agree with you, Matt.
They may have a case.
Yeah.
But we don't know.
But we need a way lot more information what we have here to make a decision on something like this. We need SCS records. We need all that kind of stuff. We need that before we can make a decision on that.
I mean, I can see it's flooded. I see that. But procedurally, I've been on the board. I've never done this before. I've never encountered this before. We've had flooding, but we've never seen this form 425 before.
It's May 31st is when I got a notification that there was a new form posted to their website. It's like here, report of destroyed real property.
So then the citizen goes there, they fill it out, they give it to us on the 15th. Up until the 15th, we knew nothing about this, which was Monday. So the first time that we can hear it is today on the 17th, and we got to make a decision in 8 days.
You know, and it gets really complicated, too, some of these laws, because we get all of our protests filed at the end of June. On June 30th, that went into July 3rd, I'm getting tons of protests coming in and trying to get people to settle them for, you know, real quick, too. I mean, the August 10th did not say for the counties that have populations over, you know, that would be Lancaster and Douglas.
As being a dryland farmer, did they pay a premium on this land when they raised good corn in 2012?
Good point. Counselor, how do we handle this?
Well, I guess my first thing is, you know, something like this, when you get dumped on you, usually you'd sit down and research this thing, talk to the people up in Lincoln, because I can't believe, like Matt's saying, that they just dumped this form on you and say, okay, you got, we couldn't, if The form was due on the 15th. Don can't even get it on the agenda until that Monday morning, which, you know, possibly
would I would work. Say if we take this to the Attorney General, he'd say, hey, you weren't given adequate notification.
Thing is, it was discussed at length at a county board workshop. When was
that? That's not a public meeting.
But I'm just saying it was discussed at length, and I don't know when was. I don't know.
But even in the receipt of the, not even I don't even have it now. In the receipt of these is the 15th.
All right.
The last.
So I agree with you.
So what I'm saying, in order to digest these with our contractually
referee,
has he or his employees had an opportunity to look at it too, to give us a recommendation? It's just an extremely short time frame, and I'm saying, hey, great, you filed them, that's good, but you know, we should deny these, go to Turk, and let them shake it out. You might have a claim here. We don't have enough time to make a reasonable assertion on this.
Are those six people going to be here today?
No, because
how can you have a hearing without the protesters?
I don't. From my understanding, from the rules, you don't have to let them know. Do you have to let them know that you're hearing them?
Well, what basically it envisions is that the protest will be reviewed by this board. If it meets the criterion, they will assess a reduced value based upon damage to either the residential, the improvements, or the real estate. Then you have to send that notice of adjustment to these people. If they're not happy, then they file a protest. Not to Turk. It looks like it comes back up here for a full board public hearing.
By the 25th?
And that's what I'm saying. The timelines here, and I'll be honest with you, Senator, I would not render a legal opinion on this because this is what the Department of Rev says you need to know. I want to see what the rules and regulations are and see what the commissioner has ruled, because I cannot believe that they would put, number one, the board in this kind of a position, number two, the citizens that are out there that have to contact somebody like Lloyd or John, somebody to give them, your property's been damaged, X them out. And that goes along with all these other information sources such as FMHA, are you going to be able in your insurance? I mean, if they're going to recover on that, then we get into what Eddie's talking about. Do we really got a loss? Or you, and I don't want anybody to think I believe that, but you know, the insurance is out there to protect you in this thing. Now, we know that usually doesn't cover you. It certainly doesn't cover what you could have made. But all that's supposed to be done before, July 15th. I don't know if anybody could get that kind of an expert.
And in that breath, I'm surprised we don't have a ton more. And should we have a lot more?
Yeah. Exactly. But now the timeline's gone.
I had one gentleman come talk to me in the middle of June, and he was able to replant. And if he was able to replant, he wasn't going to file, and he wasn't coming back in.
But this includes, we're talking primarily on farm ground here, but what dwellings? Because this affects dwellings too,
and improvements.
No, there's been none filed in my county on dwellings.
But what's the awareness of the citizens of this? You know, quite frankly, we didn't even have an opportunity when we sent out. Because when do you send out?
May 31st.
And this form came out when?
Don has the date on it.
Did this form come out?
I looked and I see an email that went out on May 31st.
Okay, so May 31st, how do we get this in a mailer to provide notification to the citizens?
Remember one thing. This is a one-year thing.
Yeah.
Okay? One time. One shot at this.
Yeah. I think it's good. I'm not opposed to the process. I think that the fact that there's an accommodation for that's great. But
I would say
I would have thought we would have had tons of improvement.
I would think that there would have been a press release and a radio announcement from the legislative.
Hey, I had some sand on my path.
When was?
And get anything done about it.
The sand's still there.
This is a special thing.
Well, it is. It is.
That
Lloyd is available for 2 days. It's up to you guys whether you want him to come in and do it. I mean, he's available for 2 days, then he's on vacation. The only other thing is, then you'd have to have a quorum, and we'd have to address it on the 25th. At a quick board meeting. And on the denial to Turk, then you would have to send Roger or legal counsel, because I would have, I mean, that's where.
But if we're in a, and we, you know, we're trying to think out Mother Nature, what if this now perpetuates other years? We need to get a better handle on this. And so understanding how this works, providing notification in that statute, or what is this, is it just a one-year thing?
Right now, as far as I know, it is.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think the law is in place, you know, for the future.
Yeah, I agree, because it doesn't have a, it says as of January 12 o'clock a.m. through July 1st. There's no year on it. Yeah. So technically, but it's a generic form.
If I understand it right, this was created for the massive flooding and everything else throughout Nebraska this spring. And
Which we had no indication was coming. What if it happens again next spring? Very well could. What if we're in a wet pattern?
What if it happens after July 1st?
Yeah.
You know, that's another thing. Where did that magical date come from?
Well,
it could happen.
Yeah. I mean, the law is there. We have to deal with it. You know, and it has nothing to do with your crop that was planted or not planted. It has to do with damage to your land. And I don't think there's any way to insure your land as far as damage to it from, you know, flooding. If your riverbank falls off, it's just gone. You know, if it gouges through, it's gone, you know. If it puts 6 foot of sand on and you decide it's more expensive to remove the sand than what the ground's worth, your land value is going to come down next year. And this mechanism is just to get it down one year quicker.
1 year.
For people that basically got no use of their land this year.
So you would either use Lloyd and trust what he sees out there, and if it's 20% damage, and you give him the break for this year, and if not, then he would say no change. It would just be like a protest.
And I guess I feel that'd be the smartest thing to do. I mean, Lloyd's going to have to get records from them people. He'll have to get the SCS records, and the tracks, and he knows all that stuff.
He's got 2 days because next week he's on vacation.
Okay, well,
next week we have to have a special meeting on Thursday.
Because it's going to be hot.
You're only dealing with two individuals here.
Well, he's got to be here at 1 for a protest.
And he won't get it done today.
You want to get it done today? He can call.
And
he doesn't. If
he won't have time to do that. Like I say, he'll have to go to the SCS office and get the certified acres, get the prevent plan acres. It should be all on their maps because that has to be done by the 15th of July. And that's where I got to go right now to the SCS office. I'll be back. Anything from me? I'll be back at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
Do you guys want it?
Certification got extended, didn't it?
Just for the slow ones.
No, till the 22nd.
I know.
But no,
I certified.
You guys want to visit with Lloyd real quick?
But Lloyd won't know anything more than we do.
No.
Well, he wants to call him by phone if you want it done today.
Well, if we can you do it over the phone?
He says he can. Then you guys are going to have to have a special meeting.
They can provide the maps that they certified these acres for. I would go by that.
Then you would have to have a special meeting on Thursday with the quorum.
And Roger, with these before us, we either have to approve them or deny them.
That's right.
So we will have to act on them.
Lisa's locked.
I mean,
we can't just.
That's why I was looking at, you know, like such things. And Lloyd may know this as far as who has a burden of proof here. Yeah. I assume the protester. We go with what the assessor says.
So that we don't have.
I mean, that's where you start with.
Yeah.
If you're not happy with that, you got to come in and show me that your property's been damaged at least 20%.
Yeah.
No.
Well, who are they going to bring that in on?
I agree with what Roger's saying. If you agree with them, we're either agreeing with the protester or we're agreeing with you. So if you're in concurrence, then that makes it a slam dunk. Move on.
Yeah. I mean, but again, you need to be able to establish to the board that there is at least a 20% decrease in value of the property, not the crops. Not the ability to grow crops, although that's a factor. And see, that's where we're getting into this. This is like the dog-on-dog thing. Dog-on-dog.
That was pretty good.
But, you know, we're all going to get this, well, I got sand on my... Well, you know, that doesn't mean your crops aren't going to grow.
So you're saying that if that ground will sell for the same amount today Okay, I missed that part. I was
And John very aptly, you know, says don't lose sight of the what we're really here for.
Yep.
I don't think my property's worth as much anymore because it's got a bunch of sand and loam on it now.
Erosion, you know.
Or it's not there.
Yeah, not there.
Well, get it certified to grow hemp. Doesn't that grow in sand, Eric?
Yeah. Creek bottoms.
Carrots.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
But no, so it's the value, not the damage.
Yeah, that's all this is. That's all you guys look at when you do real estate protests. Right.
It's not crop damage, it's land damage.
Because, I mean, we did a lot of work over in Missouri for that sand stuff. They had 4 and 5 feet of...
Thank you. So do you want Lloyd to try to do something today, or do you want to go and have a special meeting on the 25th?
Well, my thought would be is if he could look at it today and come back and tell us this, if it's value of the property and not the damage to the property.
25th. I always forget to ask. Yeah, are we arm wrestling over 1,000?
You're getting that. Well, it depends because it depends how many acres. If it's classed as a 1D1 soil along a riverbank, that's a pretty good soil. And we take it down to waste.
It's a 20% reduction. What do you think you have?
It's not a 20% reduction. You have to have 20% damage. But if that land is 80% damaged, you know.
It's 80% off.
Yep.
Yeah, then you reduce it by 80%. But then if it's pasture ground, how did it get damaged?
Yep.
I don't know that any of it is.
But we're going to have to get that.
But that's not prime soil. I mean, I don't know about the bus property. That's pretty good soil. But
we're going to have to get that from Lloyd as to what...
And you know, the only thing I'm in...
Do you want him to go look today and bring something back to us?
I don't think he's got time today.
I wonder if he does.
He's trying to get all these other things.
Let's call him.
What if he does it now and then, even if he's late...
You just have to call people.
Go.
And Lisa's done some walking. Maybe between the two of them, they can...
Let's see if he can do it.
Eric, we need a recess.
Well, are we...
John,
yeah.
You got an NRD lake on your property, and it goes out of the bank and takes out your crop. You ain't covered.
Well, you know,
you don't get no reduction. You don't get paid.
She wanted to have Lloyd come.
But I think, did you own that land at the time the pond was put there?
What's that?
Did you own that land at the time the pond was put there?
Tell us if we can do it.
Let me just.
They purchased the land of the permanent pool.
25 acres of grassland. Well,
yeah, it's all.
Tell Lloyd to just try to have it back to us.
Did you get
nothing after that?
You didn't get no payment from the rest of it?
Everything. Oh.
Not from when it goes out of its bank.
I'm trying to recover economic loss this year.
What do you think it's CRP around there? Half the time you can't get it planted.
I was surprised I didn't get stuck there.
So, John, we'll recess at 10:55, waiting for Lloyd to come down.
I think we just do phone interviews and get married.
We'll call the board of supervisors back to...
She agitates. She does it. Activist, I don't mind.
Back in order at 10:59 on the clock.
Well, I tell activists, I says the best thing you do, run for office.
So if we go through this now, Lloyd can go through and call these people, check on the properties, try to do an assessment of what, if there's 20% damage or not, and get back to us for the 1 o'clock meeting?
I'll do the best I can.
Or try to.
Assumes I can get a hold of them. But, yeah, the one I looked at was, obviously, it was 30%, which is as clear as the day, the day is long. But I need to talk to them.
You could see that it was 30% damage?
So on the information they gave me, yes. Or gave the county.
The other one.
Well, I haven't looked at all of them yet.
Okay. So. Does that make sense if he would look through that, give his professional opinion to us, and present it at 1? Is everyone happy with that?
You have the qualifications to do this?
It's my opinion and it's right.
Oh. I've heard that from you for years.
You've heard that for a long time. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like this board. All right, with that. That would be great. We'll see you guys at 1.
Thank you, gentlemen.
And we'll adjourn at 11. If there's nothing else, anything else for Board of Supervisors, we'll adjourn at 11 o'clock. See you guys at 1.